This is The Solo Shot with your host, Jim Sonnen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome on into The Solo Shot on the Number Fire Podcast Network. I'm happy to have you here and be chatting some daily fantasy baseball on this Thursday, September 14th. My name is Matt Musico. I'm an editor and writer for NumberFire.com. And although we do have 12 games happening on this Thursday, we must deal with a familiar issue. And that's the fact that we have a split slate going on, an early-only slate and also a main slate. The early-only slate in the afternoon features just three different games, while the main slate has eight others. And for some reason, the Colorado-Arizona game happening at Chase Field with a scheduled first pitch of 3:40 Eastern time this afternoon is only available on the all-day slate. So make sure you keep that in mind before you go in and start building your rosters and trying to figure out who you want to be rostering where. What we'll be doing today, though, is going through some options on the mound and at the plate for both slates. So we have quite a bit of sifting through on our hands to be going through. But before we do that, let's quickly check in with the weather. And there are very slight chances of rain in Boston, Detroit, Philly, and Washington, but it doesn't look like to be anything significant. However, it certainly is something to monitor at the moment. There is a greater chance of rain in the Bronx for the Yankees and the Orioles, so that's probably something that you want to be keeping more of an eye on if that's a game that is of interest to you, and it probably should be at some particular point. The wind is projected to be blowing out at Yankee Stadium out to the left field at 7 miles per hour as well, so that's also something to keep in mind. And the wind is also projected to be blowing out to right field at 8 miles per hour in Anaheim for the Angels and the Astros. And that's pretty much it. Like I said, there are some situations to keep an eye on, but it doesn't look like there's anything super serious going on at the moment. And as always, don't forget that NumberFire has you covered when it comes to having this information all in one spot. Our starting lineups and game info page helps you keep track of the weather throughout the day with an hour-by-hour snapshot of the forecast, along with confirming the starting lineups as they get announced. It's a great resource that has everything in one spot as you're trying to make roster decisions, so definitely be sure to use it. As we move on to the early slate, when we take a look at our options on the mound for this particular slate, we obviously don't have the luxury of many options just because we don't have many games going on, first of all. But there are also really no true like slam dunk plug-and-play aces that we can put right into our lineup without really having to worry about it. There are two guys in particular that catch my eye, though, and they are Drew Pomeranz at 8,700 and Luke Weaver at 9,200. Outside of Chris Sale, it could be argued that Pomeranz has been the second most consistent starter for the Red Sox this year. He's won 15 games, and while his 9% walk rate is a little high, he makes up for it with a 25% strikeout rate and 10.1% swinging strike rate. And it just so happens that his opponent, the Oakland A's, really enjoy racking up strikeouts against southpaws. Their 25% strikeout rate in this situation is one of the worst in baseball, as is their team WRC Plus of 86. Pomeranz has a lot of hard contact over his last two starts, and he's seen his swinging strike rate go down to 5.8% during that time. However, he has been mostly a reverse splits guy this season. Righties have tagged him for just a 294 wOBA compared to a 357 mark from lefties. And if we take a look at Oakland's lineup, it's not as if they're littered with fearsome lefties. Matt Olson has shown a bit of power lately, but there's also Jed Lowry, Matt Joyce, and Boog Powell that usually find their way into the everyday lineup these days. So each of them aren't really tremendous game-changing type hitters, and they don't really scare me enough to not be interested in using Drew Pomeranz. Jim would probably be mad at me putting Lowry in that group, so definitely don't tell him that I did that. But moving on from there, of all the hurlers on both slates, though, the one with the best Sierra is Cardinals righty Luke Weaver with a 299 mark. Obviously, it's a much smaller sample size, just 41.2 innings of work, but he's basically been doing everything you could ask for. His strikeout rate is up at 31%, and it's supported by an 11.1% swinging strike rate. His walk rate is at 7%, and he's allowed hard contact just 25% of the time. Weaver's last four starts have also been tremendous. He's pitched into the sixth inning in each, hasn't recorded fewer than seven strikeouts in each, and has come away with two quality starts in four consecutive wins. The competition may have not been the best. He faced San Diego, Milwaukee, San Francisco, and Pittsburgh. But with the Reds set to face him tonight, that really shouldn't be much of an issue that we need to be concerned with. The Reds do have one of the highest fly ball rates against righties this year, but they also rank in the bottom half of the league with regard to hard hit rate. And when we're splitting out his performance by handedness, Weaver has really been tough on lefties so far this year, limiting them to just a 221 wOBA and an 18% hard hit rate allowed in 69 total batters faced. Cincinnati's three big lefties, with regard to home run pop at least, include Joey Votto, Scooter Gennett, and Scott Schebler. It'll be tough to keep Votto silent just because I'm not really sure if he's a human or a machine, but given how dominant Weaver has been lately, he's got some intriguing upside here for tournaments. So if I'm looking at these two and had to rank them for tournaments, I'd probably be going Weaver first and then Pomerantz, because I think Weaver has a higher ceiling with regard to his swing and miss potential and being able to rack up strikeouts, especially something that he's done lately. And like we mentioned with Pomerantz, his swing and strike rate has been alarmingly low over the past couple of starts. However, I'd feel pretty comfortable using either in cash games, but if I had to choose one, my pick would probably be Weaver again, because this game is being played at Busch Stadium. The Cards' offense is rolling, which we'll talk about in a second, and he's got a great shot at taking home the win. So I think also, as well as having a greater ceiling than Pomerantz, I think his floor is a little more secure than Pomerantz is at the moment. That is a nice segue into the stacks that I'll be targeting on this particular slate. I do feel obliged to talk briefly about the White Sox-Tigers game, which features Chad Bell and James Shields as the probable pitchers. Now, this looks like a game that's ripe for offense based on each pitcher's peripherals, and the 10.0 over-under is tied for the highest on the day, so that definitely backs up what we're thinking. Do you need me to tell you to target pitchers that are giving up a good amount of hard contact? They both have poor Sierras, and they both have walk rates over 10%. The answer to that is no. Since that'll probably be a popular spot for stacks, especially given the fact that there are only three games to choose from on the early slate, I'm going to be steering clear of it here, but I just want to say that it is probably good to at least get some kind of exposure, whether it be a one-off player or maybe a two-player mini stack, to be able to kind of supplement that with what else you're doing in the rest of your lineup. But with that said, let's go right back to the Cardinals. We mentioned that they'll be facing the Reds, who will be sending Amir Garrett to the mound. And to put it simply, the lefty has not had a good year. He's thrown 63.1 innings in the majors, and he's posted a 509 Sierra with a 19% strikeout rate, an 11% walk rate, and a hard hit rate allowed that's all the way up to 42%. He's struggled against everyone, but since he's allowed a 389 wOBA to righties and 233 batters faced, that's my preferred plan of attack here. There's no shortage of options from that side of the dish either when we take a look at the Cardinals lineup. If we want to focus on the top half of St. Louis's projected lineup, guys like Tommy Pham at 3,600 and Paul DeJong at 3,400 both have hard hit rates and fly ball rates of at least 33% against southpaws, so those are good options. They also have, while the process has been good for them, they've also had the results as well. Each of them have a WRC plus over 140 in this situation. The overall results haven't been there for Dexter Fowler, but he's been hitting cleanup lately when he's in the lineup and has a 36% hard hit rate and 35% fly ball rate against lefties, which would work for me at 3,300. However, he has missed three straight games with a knee injury, so if he does have to sit out again, take a look and see if Harrison Bader sneaks into the lineup again. The sample size is small with him in this situation, just 15 plate appearances, but he has put together a 77% hard hit rate and 39% fly ball rate to go with a hefty 321 WRC+. So that could be a cheap option to be able to get some exposure to this lineup as well. Yadier Molina is another great option at catcher. He's a little bit more expensive than you'd want probably, a catcher at 3,500, but his hard hit and fly ball rates are both above 40%. So it looks like the upside is there to be able to reach value for him. If we go a little further down in the lineup and also in the pricing scale, Jose Martinez at 2,800 has a similar batter ball profile to Molina despite just 61 plate appearances against southpaws. However, he has turned that into a 245 WRC+. Randall Grichuk has been hitting near the bottom of St. Louis's lineup lately, but he can also be some cheap exposure to this matchup at also $2,800. His 76 WRC+ and 97 plate appearances against southpaws is not good, but the process is definitely there. He's got a 42% hard hit rate and 51% fly ball rate. And while he is left-handed, we didn't even mention Matt Carpenter in all this. He is expensive. He's the most expensive position player in this particular game at 4,100. But his batter ball profile has been tasty all year, and this matchup is no different. So, like I said before, there are tons of different ways you can attack Garrett in this matchup. Just like there are in the Red Sox, who get a matchup against Daniel Gossett of the A's. Gossett has a 19% strikeout rate on the year, but he has upped that up to 26% over his past two starts. The only problem there, though, is that he's only lasted 9.2 innings during that time, partially thanks to a 17% walk rate. Boston is one of the best teams in baseball with regard to limiting strikeout against righties, while Gossett has also done a pretty good job at limiting hard contact, and he gives up a lot of contact overall. His contact rate this year is 80.2%. And he's been a reverse splits guy. He's allowing a 365 wOBA with a 27% line drive rate, 33% fly ball rate, and 36% hard hit rate against righties. So we obviously want to start with Mookie Betts here. He's obviously a top tier option at $4,600, but it's hard to pass up when you see he's got a 35% hard hit rate and 44% fly ball rate in this situation. If you want to get a little cheaper, Xander Bogaerts could be another guy to get exposure to this matchup at $3,300. But mostly, I want to be zeroing in more on some of the value plays, like Hanley Ramirez at $2,900, and also Chris Young at $2,300. Young has been known as a lefty masher throughout, especially the recent years in his career, but he's been doing the opposite this year, and he's posted a 115 WRC plus against righties. So if he's in the lineup, he's definitely a nice way to save some cash and help you be able to manage fitting in bets if he follows your process and you want to be able to fit him into your lineup somehow. But also, we've been focusing on righties here, but if you want to get some traditional platoon advantage exposure to Gossett, nobody can fault you for using guys like Andrew Benintendi, even though he's a little expensive at $4,000, and Mitch Moreland at $3,000. They have both had success in this situation and the batter ball profile to back it up. All right, before we take a look at the main slate, we don't want you to forget that NFL season is officially here in case you missed all of the craziness that was the week one action over the past week. If you haven't tried it out yet, you can catch all the games on TuneIn and the TuneIn app. Whether you're at home or on the go, you can listen to the home call of every game live, or you can pop in and out of the action every Sunday with NFL First and Goal. That's TuneIn's audio red zone station, and you can download the TuneIn app today and listen to the NFL for free for 30 days. TuneIn is your everything audio app, and remember that you can also find all of Number Fire's podcasts on TuneIn by searching for the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. All right, well, let's move on to the main slate, and there are some more familiar names here than the early slate on the mound, but there are three guys in particular that I want to focus on, and those hurlers are Tanner Roark at 8,600, Masahiro Tanaka at 9,000, and Brad Peacock at 8,600. Roark had a terrible month of June. I think his ERA was up over 8.0, which is really terrible. And that's really been dragging down some of his season-long numbers. But since the start of July, he's really been back to normal. During that time, which is 67 innings of work, he has a 385 Sierra, and that includes a 25% strikeout rate, 8% walk rate, 50% ground ball rate, and just a 22% hard hit rate allowed. This period of time does span 11 starts, and he's been able to secure that quality start bonus on 8 different occasions. He'll be facing the Braves tonight, and although they did just knock around Max Scherzer last night, and Roark did face him back on July 8th and just struck out 2 hitters over 5 innings pitched, he did produce a 10.5% swing and strike rate during that time. And if we take a look at his swing and strike rate during this 11-start stretch, it's just been below 9% just once. Atlanta is one of the hardest teams for righties to strike out, but they also sit in the bottom half of the league with regard to both hard hit rate and fly ball rate. Lefties have given Roark a harder time than righties this year, but unless the Braves try and force Matt Adams into the lineup, the only lefty with legitimate power here that could be probably a little scary is Freddie Freeman. So that lineup doesn't nearly scare me when considering Roark's strengths and his ability to limit hard contact overall for the year and most especially lately. As for Tanaka, he'll be at home against the Baltimore Orioles, and he's at... When we take a look at what he has been doing well this year, what he's not been doing well this year overall, he's that typical boom or bust option for a tournament kind of dart throw. It's kind of weird to call him a dart throw since he's the most expensive pitcher on the board for the main slate, but that's basically what it is, it feels like, at this point. The Orioles rank in the top half of the league with regard to hard hit rate and fly ball rate against righties, but they do also strike out at a top 10 rate. This makes Tanaka an interesting option because he's been prone to allowing homers this year, but he's also been striking out a bunch of guys. And having this game take place at the launching pad that is Yankee Stadium doesn't make this decision-making process any easier. Baltimore is a right-handed heavy lineup, and while that doesn't impact Tanaka's strikeout numbers a whole lot, his batter ball profile changes quite a bit. His fly ball rate allowed goes from 28% to left-handed hitters all the way up to 36% to right-handed hitters. However, his homers allowed per 9 innings rate has gone all the way down to .77 since the beginning of August, which is a vast improvement from the 1.96 mark he produced through the end of July. And while his 25% strikeout rate ranks just 4th for all of the pitchers going today, his 14.5% swing and strike rate is easily the best amongst this group. So, like I said, Tanaka has some things going in his direction. He's got a potentially high ceiling, but also the floor doesn't seem very high as well, or very sturdy. This makes the decision hard, and while I wouldn't really touch him at all in cash games, I would definitely give him a whirl in tournaments, just because of what he's been able to do lately, and being able to limit the home run ball over the last couple of months. Last but not least, Brad Peacock will hit the road to face the Angels, who have a top 10 WRC plus and one of the lowest team strikeout rates against righties. The good thing, though, is that Peacock supplies a lot of strikeouts himself. His 11% walk rate bakes in a little bit of risk here, but he does make up for it with a 31% strikeout rate to go along with a solid 12.4% swinging strike rate. When he does allow contact, he's been among the best of this group that is pitching today in limiting hard contact. His hard hit rate allowed is 28%, while his 25% soft hit rate allowed is easily the best. And when we look at LA's everyday lineup, it's once again very right-handed heavy, and that bodes well for Peacock, who has limited righties to just a 241 wOBA while generating a 49% ground ball rate and a 31% soft hit rate. Mike Trout and Justin Upton will be the problem areas here to navigate through in the lineup, but with a team ISO of just 152 that ranks in the bottom five of the league, there's not a whole lot of power threats in this Angel lineup. Peacock typically doesn't go deep into ballgames, but he's gotten into the sixth inning in each of his last four starts, which includes three instances of at least eight strikeouts. When it comes to ranking these guys for tournaments, I'd probably go with Tanaka first because I think his ceiling is the highest and he's able to probably has the best opportunity to get deepest into the game if he is rolling. Followed by Peacock and then Roark. But if we're talking about cash games, I think Roark's floor is the most stable of these three. As for stacks, why not? Let's just keep rolling with Houston, right? With all the winning that the Indians are doing, I mean, they have a new American League record with 21 straight wins, and then they've also been able to take over the AL's best record to secure home field advantage for the playoffs. It sure seems like the Astros have become somewhat of an afterthought at the moment, but we can't forget that this is still a team that has tons of offensive upside, especially in the right matchup, which should happen tonight against Ricky Nolasco. Based off his 11% swinging strike rate, he should probably be striking out guys a little bit better than his current 19% rate, but his 37% hard hit rate allowed is one of the worst marks of all the pitchers going today. And that number jumps up to 37% if we take a look at his past two starts, which spans just 9.1 innings of work. When looking at Houston bats to target, Nolasco has struggled mostly against righties this year, allowing a 393 wOBA off the strength of a 37% fly ball rate, 40% hard hit rate, and a 50% pull rate. The Astros easily have the best team WRC plus in this situation this year, and they've got a ton of guys with a favorable batter ball profile against righties. They include guys like Jose Altuve at 4,100, Carlos Correa, who's pretty discounted at 3,400 right now, George Springer at 3,600, Yuliesky Gurriel at 3,700, Marwin Gonzalez at 2,900, and even Jake Mariznick down at 2,300. Each of these hitters have at least 150 plate appearances against righties this year, so the sample size is big enough to believe in, and they all have a WRC plus above 110 in this situation, so the results are also there as well as the process. The other stack that catches my eye is the Chicago Cubs, who will be facing Seth Lugo of the New York Mets at Wrigley Field. Chicago does strike out quite a bit against righties, but that's also not a huge part of Lugo's game. He has a 90% strikeout rate and just an 8.5% swinging strike rate, so it's not like he's due for any positive regression in this department. And since he boasts just a 6% walk rate, his uneven results through the 83.1 innings of work that he's had this year can be attributed to the contact he's allowing, which there's plenty of. His 82% contact rate allowed is the fourth highest mark on the entire day, and his 36% hard hit rate allowed is the seventh highest. Lugo hasn't had much success away from Citi Field this year either, which is something to note. He has a 284 ERA and a 285 wOBA allowed at home, but those marks jump up to 575 and 348 on the road, respectively. His already low strikeout rate dips even more down to 16% when he's facing lefties, who have posted a 25% line drive rate, a 35% fly ball rate, and 36% hard hit rate against him. It's pretty obvious that we'd probably like to start to stack off with Anthony Rizzo and his 34% hard hit rate and 41% fly ball rate. He's just $3,800 tonight. It is a little bit expensive, but when we take a look at some of the other high-priced studs that are going to be going up in favorable matchups tonight, that's actually kind of a discount. And even though he's suffered through a rough year overall, Kyle Schwarber is still approaching a 30-homer campaign, which is pretty crazy. And it's partially thanks to his 38% hard hit rate and 47% fly ball rate in this situation. He's also $3,800 tonight. Ian Happ, if we take a look a little bit lower on the price scale, he's another lefty with pop that has a favorable batted ball profile against righties. He's just $3,200. And if you're trying to get your catcher from the Cubs tonight, you're in luck if either Avila or Wilson Contreras are going to be starting tonight. Avila is just $2,600. Wilson Contreras is just $3,000. They both have a pretty favorable batted ball profile against right-handed pitchers and have also had quite a bit of success. So it's been a pretty long year for the Mets, and the matchup like this probably won't really help make anyone feel better in Queens, but this is something that we can definitely be targeting when it comes to DFS purposes tonight. All right, guys, that's it for today's edition of the Solo Shot right here on the Number Fire Podcast Network. We've been podcasting plenty this week, so I hope you've been keeping up with it all. Jim Sonnis and Brandon Gandula are back today on the Heat Check later on to discuss DFS options for Week 2 in the NFL. And JJ Zacharyson's Late Bound podcast is back today to cover some popular start and sit questions before lineups lock. Basically, anything you need to get ready for the next week in football, we have for you. So be sure to either listen to us talking about it or head over to numberfire.com and get all the knowledge you need to dominate for the week. Again, please don't forget to subscribe. To take a minute and subscribe, rate and review the podcast wherever you consume them, whether it's SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, or Google Play. We appreciate the feedback you all give us so we can keep making these shows better. Obviously, that's the whole reason why we're continuing to do this. We want to help you guys and we want to give you exactly what you're looking for. If you have any questions or just want to talk some baseball, feel free to hit me up on Twitter. You can find me at mmusico8. That's M-M-U-S-I-C-O, the number 8. And while you're on the Twitter machine, please give the Number Fire Podcast Network a follow at Number Fire Pods. That's P-O-D-S as in podcasts. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us during your busy day. Best of luck building your lineups tonight. Have a great day, everybody. This has been the Solo Shot on the Number Fire Podcast Network.